Namaste and welcome to the Om Som Yoga and Ayurveda podcast.
A space to dive into how we as humans can live more intentional, ethical and sustainable lives.
And how we can come into harmony with ourselves, others and nature in the process.
We share tips to help you cultivate a healthy body, calm mind and a strong purpose through the traditional Vedic wisdom of yoga and Ayurveda.
My name is Aaron Petty. I'm a yoga teacher, teacher trainer, yoga therapist, but most importantly, I am forever a student of this great tradition.
And my name is Paige Taylor. I'm a yoga teacher, Ayurvedic health consultant, advocate for sustainable living and lover of all beings.
And right now, we're in Bali, taking a little bit of R&R. It's beautiful. We're very grateful and blessed to be here. Mm. The weather has been incredible. And we decided a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, we booked it, to come here and just take 2 weeks off. Mm. And I reckon this might be one of our first holidays that we've ever taken since we met. Yeah. And it's just been so luscious. Mm. We, like, a lot of the time we will go and travel somewhere, but a lot of the time that travel is for work related purposes, whether we're doing a training or we're running a training, or last year we went to India for a recon mission, and a lot of those holidays or traveling experiences are filled with work related activities. Mm-hmm. And this holiday is a holiday just to relax.
Yeah.
I think just like anyone in a creative role, a creative job, if you work for an extended period of time without stopping, you can start to get a little bit depleted. And I was definitely feeling that over the last couple of months. I was just starting to, you know, go through the paces, and that creativity wasn't quite there. And so I'm really starting to feel that creativity and inspiration re-enlivened within me.
Yeah, for sure.
And right now we're sitting in our little villa. It's the first time I've ever stayed in a private villa. I feel like a celebrity or something. We've got like a private pool and everything.
Yeah.
And so we thought, what better a place for us to do a podcast? And so today's episode will be all about the yogic art of cleansing. Mm. In Sanskrit, there's a few terms that we can use to speak to the idea of cleansing, but for me what comes up first is saucha. Mm. Saucha is one of the niyamas. One of the yamas.
I don't know.
One of the yamas and niyamas. And it means cleanliness. Mm. That there's a yogic obligation for all of us, if we call ourselves yogis, to be in this continual process of cleansing, clearing, cleaning ourselves and our environment. Mm. And so that's what we wanted to talk about today. And it's kind of a timely topic because we've been on a bit of a cleansing journey over the last couple of months. Mm. So maybe first let's have a look at what is cleansing from a yogic perspective, because I'm sure if we use that word cleansing, a lot of stuff could come up, especially in like modern wellness. There is a lot of cleansing practices. Mm-hmm. Some of them great, some of them not so great. But we want to talk about specifically what is the yogic and Ayurvedic context for cleansing. Mm. So for me, I think what's helpful in order to understand this is to look at it through the lens of the koshas. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've listened to our podcast on the koshas. Mm. And if you have listened to that, you will know that the koshas are the Pancha Maya koshas, the five bodies that are given to us from one of the Upanishads. And it's essentially a map that we can view ourselves through in order to transcend our fears and in order to transcend, you know, the limitation of just understanding ourselves to be a body, a single physical body. Yeah. And so what are those five koshas? Run us through them quickly.
We've got Anamaya kosha, which is the sheath of the physical body or the food body. We've got Pranamaya kosha, the sheath or the body of prana, of energy, of nourishment. We've got the Manamaya kosha, which is the sheath or the layer of the mind. The intellect, almost, would you say? Yes. And then we've got don't tell me it. I know the fifth one off the top of my head, and I know the idea of Vijnanamaya kosha, Vijnanamaya Kosha is that the knowledge of, or the sheath of knowledge and wisdom and, you know, soul purpose almost. And then we've got Anamaya Kosha, Anandamaya Kosha, and that's the sheath of bliss, of the soul, of the highest aspect of who we are.
Yeah, totally. And so in yoga therapy, we kind of simplify this, and especially when I'm working with clients, I simplify it in this way, that we are five bodies. We are a physical body. Mm-hmm. We are an energy body that is our breath and our energy levels. We're the body of mind. Mm-hmm. Vijnana, I say, is our emotional body. It's mm-hmm. a body of feeling.
Yeah.
And Anandamayam is like the deepest part of our personality structure. Mm,
yeah.
It's who we are at our very core, our essence is Anandamayam. Mm. And so we can look at the cleansing process as cleansing at any one of those levels. So cleansing of the physical body could look like
Ayurvedic cleansing, Khichdi cleansing, kriyas, what we're going to talk about in this podcast today. Yeah.
Like a digestive cleanse. And maybe you're familiar with something along the lines of like a juice fast or a water fast. Something like that is physical cleansing.
Yeah.
Energetic cleansing, we look at the world of pranayama.
Sage all of the different Palo Santo.
No, I don't know if that would work in the same way. But maybe there's a subtle energetic cleansing there.
I'm sure it doesn't
there. Subtly. I'm thinking more like the kriyas, kapalbhati, all of that kind of stuff, like pranayama techniques that have the intention of cleansing energetically. Mental cleansing could be something like pratyahara, like just withdrawing from the senses for a few days, or, you know, refraining from social media or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional cleansing, for me, what comes up is like expressing our emotions, just having tough conversations with someone, or just like being able to express how we feel to someone else.
I think journaling as well can come into that as a practice of sifting through all those emotions that we feel.
And then spiritual cleansing could be connecting to some kind of higher power that you are devoting yourself in some way to something higher, whatever that is for you.
Yeah, and it's almost like the purification of your karma, that the more you, you know, choose actions that align with your highest purpose, your soul, you know, whether that's, you know, stepping onto your mat every day to practice your yoga asana, pranayama meditation, or whether it's, you know, fulfilling dharmic duties, you know, the what you do for work, your relationships. I think it just comes down to, you know, acting in a way that is truly supportive of you and your life purpose. And in doing that, you purify the karmas of your life, your past lives, and you continue on the path to moksha or liberation.
Mm. And that that purification of our actions is just one of the most foundational things in yogic lifestyle and yogic practice. That if we're not doing this cleansing and purging ourselves of what's not useful for us or what's toxic to us, then we get weighed down by it.
Yeah.
And so it really is that path of liberation that all of us are on as yogis. Cleansing is a really, really big part of that.
You definitely hit record, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You want me to double check?
I just can't see any flashing lights. Normally
I can go and double check.
Normally I see a flashing light.
Yeah, well, it's because we don't have the monitor here right now. No, it's recording.
Okay, great.
Big win. Okay. So recently, the last 3 months, really from the beginning of this year until maybe when we left for Bali, I went through a huge cleansing process.
Mm-hmm.
On the 1st of January, I made a decision to remove myself from social media. That was kind of the first stage of that cleanse for me. I really started to realize that I was spending a lot of time on social media. Not only was I spending a lot of time on social media, but I was noticing that my thoughts were being clouded by the ideas that I was picking up from social media, that a lot of my thoughts weren't mine anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was finding that I would wake up in the morning and instead of having some, inspiration or some dream to ponder on that was my own, I had like some trending Instagram reel sound.
Yeah.
And it would, they would just go on and on and on and on and on. And so I made the decision to just delete all of the apps off of my phone for a few months. So that included deleting Facebook, deleting Instagram, deleting YouTube, deleting TikTok. All of those, what we would consider social media apps, I got rid of. And I replaced them with a writing app. And what I decided to do was anytime I had the urge to pick up my phone, and in my case, looking at my screen time, that was about 70 times a day. And I think that's probably pretty common for most people.
Mm.
Instead of opening social media, I didn't have that option anymore. And so I would open this writing app and I would just write down whatever I was thinking about at the time. Kind of like a micro journaling. And so every day I would just open a new note on my phone and that day's thoughts would just get jotted down. And what month are we in now?
May.
May, which is the fifth month. So I spent about 4 months without any social media on my phone whatsoever. And I found that that journaling process was very much cleansing in nature, that it allowed me to just rid myself of thoughts.
And that's not to say that you weren't using social media at all.
No, I would download Instagram when I had something to share. If we had something to share for the studio or we were running a training or I had some message to put out, I would download the app, I would make my video, I would post it, and I would stay for 5 minutes or so, and then I would delete the app again, mm-hmm. and I would come back whenever the next time I was called to it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, for me, just like reading myself of that noise, mentally, I felt so much lighter and so much clearer, and I found that my thoughts were my own again. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen after the first week or the second week or the third week or the fourth week. It happened over those, mm-hmm. that extended period of time. But it was massive.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed me the space to really focus on what's really important for me. It allowed me the space to focus on my own writing and my own work.
Mm-hmm.
And like having downloaded social media for the last week, I'm feeling so much more inspired to actually share things
mm-hmm.
that feel original, that feel unique and aren't tainted by trends or what I've seen other people doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months down the track, Paige and I both noticed that I was having a lot of digestive issues, and throughout my whole life I've had a lot of digestive issues. But particularly in the beginning of this year, they started to get really bad to the point where I couldn't eat any bread, I couldn't eat garlic or onions.
Mm.
It was kind of like sugary foods were triggering me, fermented foods were triggering me, and I started kind of breaking out in these rash type things, like red spots all over my forehead. I was getting bloated, I was getting gassy, and kind of just anytime we would go out to eat was really uncomfortable.
Mm.
On top of that, I found that like my cravings were unbearable to the point where I would come home after teaching and eat like 8 dates out of the fridge, or I would eat a box of cookies or something like that. And so I was really kind of like in this sugary binge process and going out to eat a lot, and then it would make me sick. And it all kind of came to this tipping point where we went away with my parents and we ate out every night, and I was just horrendously sick to the point that like my face was swelling and I was doing these putrid gassy farts. That's probably too much information. But Paige and I kind of looked at each other at the end of that, and we were like, this is enough, something needs to change. And so I spent a month doing an Ayurvedic cleanse. I just cleaned my diet right up, and we stripped it back to just the most simple diet that I could ingest, which was basically just rice and vegetables.
And dal.
And legumes and chai.
Mm-hmm.
I drank a lot of chai with rice milk.
But not caffeine chai.
No. So that went on for about a month. I just had the most simple diet possible. And after the initial discomfort of just like withdrawals from sugar, withdrawals from coffee, that kind of stuff, I started to notice that I was hungry all the time. And then I started to realize that the hunger actually, it wasn't a bad thing, that I didn't always need to feel full and satiated. Mm. And after a couple of weeks, I actually started to enjoy the feeling of hunger. It felt like a lightness. And I started to feel and notice my digestive process working the whole way through, that I would eat a meal, I would digest it, and then I would feel, okay, now I'm ready for the next meal. Mm. Yeah. On top of that, I started to feel really sharp mentally. Like there was two levels to that sharpness. One was I had no space for anyone else's crap. And I was probably a little bit narky.
You were a bit narky.
Apologies for that, my love. And then the other thing was that I just found that my thinking process was very amplified. Mm. And I had a few people like mentioned to me in conversation that I was really good at like coming back to a point. Oh. Like we were in a conversation about something, the conversation would go somewhere for a little while, and then I would come back to the point that was unfinished and I would continue to explore that. And yeah, and I found that like my memory process was a lot better, my thinking process was a lot clearer, and it was an interesting experience. Mm-hmm. How about you? How was your recent quiz?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a long intro to this topic, poor people. Similarly, I haven't detoxed from social media or anything like that, but a couple months in, I deleted the emails app from my phone, which, if you know me, you know that's like my social media of work. It was getting to a point when I was picking up my phone and I wasn't necessarily reaching for social media, but I was reaching for the emails and just refreshing the emails. And I still do it with, other apps that we have for business. But when I deleted the emails off my phone, it changed everything for me. I think that I just felt much less available to our work and our business. It felt like a really strong boundary that I was putting into place with the business, that, you know, I check my emails only when I'm ready to, and only when I open my computer and I'm sitting down and my intention is to check my emails, then I check my emails. But it was getting to a point where I would check the email and a member would want to cancel or something else that would put me into a stress frenzy. Just before I was going to bed or as soon as I woke up or, you know, when we were out on a day off or something like that. And so, yeah, just by putting that boundary into place with myself and the business, it really changed a lot for me. And I know there's a few others that I want to dial down in that way, but it seems like a really good step in the right direction for me. And it's definitely improved my work ethics and, yeah, my personal life as well.
Yeah, definitely, like, anxiety levels reduced.
Mm.
And then you did a Khichdi cleanse.
Yeah, and like? At the start of this month or last month, I ran a Khichdi cleanse. And so in order for me to host a cleanse like that, I wanted to revisit the cleanse in myself and my own experience. And this is maybe the third time, I think, that we've done
third or maybe even fourth.
Yeah, that we've done a Khichdi fast. And it's something I've been interested in. And it was really the first module of my Ayurvedic studies was to complete a cleanse like this. And so it was really nice to be able to revisit it. And it was good because Aaron was cleansing as well, so it didn't feel like super restrictive. For me, it was quite refreshing to be back in that space. And the cleanse that I do is quite strict in comparison to other ones I've seen. And it's basically, where you just eat rice and khichdi, which is just rice and mung beans, including some vegetables a little bit later down the track for period of 5-7 days. You can do longer.
What did you do, 7 days?
I ended up doing 7 days. Yeah, my intention was 5, I think, but I ended up doing 7. And I had the same experience of hunger, just like revisiting my hunger signals and understanding how they express themselves in my body. And yeah, knowing that, you know, when you get hungry, it's not the end of the world. And when you're so strict in that way of a cleanse, it's you can't just reach for a snack whenever you see something or whenever you feel like something, and you have to just be ready for your next meal. And so you really get to experience that sensation of hunger. And as Aaron said, it's just the body communicating that, you know, you're ready for your next meal. And I just found it so empowering to regain my intuition and my touch with that kind of part of my experience. And I really, really enjoyed it. And then, yeah, a couple of weeks later, I led a few people through their own Khichdi cleanse, and something I've got up on the website that can be done self-paced now. So if you're interested in that, you know, feel free to get in contact or just check out the website. We'll maybe leave a link in the in the show notes.
Sure.
Yeah, it just has all the information and the processes behind it. And yeah, I assume we're going to chat about it a bit now anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I think just on that hunger piece, I feel like in my experience, when I've been restricting myself in certain ways, that feeling of hunger, when it rises up, it's not only a physical hunger, but there's almost this hunger for life.
Mm.
That like, if I'm restricting myself from these things that I usually use to just satiate myself at a very superficial level, whether that's through media or through food, that hunger for just life experiences rises up, like hunger for connection, hunger for creation, hunger for exploration or adventure starts to rise up, where perhaps those hungers would be suppressed by the media or the foods that we consume on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's such a direct link between our physical appetite for food and our hunger for life, as you said. It's something that I explore with my clients one-on-one all the time. And I pose it to them as a reflective question. And so often it's shocking to them that, you know, maybe their lack of appetite is, you know, reflected in their lack of lust or desire for life.
Yeah.
It's just very fascinating.
Mm, for sure. Okay. And yeah, I think just the final personal experience that I wanted to share was just like my own kind of history with cleansing, that I came into cleansing with water fasting was like my first, that was what I learned first. And that was what I explored first. And if you're not familiar with water fasting, it's basically just you stop eating for an extended period of time and you only drink water. And I've been doing that for years. I don't know, maybe 6-7 years.
Mm.
And then as I continued that process and continued my studies in yoga and Ayurveda, I found different ways to cleanse. And, and I think for a lot of people, definitely for me up until a couple of years ago, I thought that water fasting was kind of the only way. Mm. Or juice fasting is really popular. And I kind of thought that liquid only fasting was the only way. And then I came across this Ayurvedic cleansing and it changed the game for me completely.
Yeah, totally.
And so I guess that moves us into our next topic of conversation, which is really just around the cleansing process. What does cleansing look like in yoga and Ayurveda? And maybe we share some tips and tricks everything that goes around that.
Sounds good.
Let's talk about the difference between modern cleansing, which we've just kind of spoken about, juice fasting, water fasting, Ayurvedic cleansing, and Hatha yoga cleansing.
Mm.
Because there is a difference, a slight difference between what we would consider cleansing in Hatha yoga and what we would consider cleansing in Ayurveda. In my experience, the Hatha yoga cleanses are probably on the little more extreme side and the Ayurveda cleanses are a little more on the gentle side.
Yeah, and I think just like as a contextual point, it's important to know that the purpose of yoga, like, you know, the goal of yoga in the traditional sense is to transcend the body.
It's yoga.
Yeah, and to almost rid yourself off the body and to, you know, experience that state of yoga, of connection with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Ayurveda, it's not really the same goal at all. The goal is instead to nourish the body, to be grounded in the body, to find health in the body.
Mm.
So of course, there's going to be differences between the two.
Totally. So let's start with Hatha yoga cleanses and what that looks like. when I say Hatha yoga cleanses, what I'm talking about specifically is what are the cleanses that are mentioned in the texts, in the scriptures, mm-hmm. specifically in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. They have what are called the Shat Kriyas. Mm. Shat is six and Kriyas are actions. Mm-hmm. And so the Shat Kriyas, some of them you might be really familiar with, something like Jala Neti, mm-hmm. Which we post about all the time, putting the neti pot in the nose and cleansing the sinuses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that we pour this kind of saline solution through the sinuses to clean the nasal passage. Why would you want to cleanse the nasal passage specifically for Hatha Yoga? For pranayama purposes. Mm-hmm. That you're using this to cleanse the nose so that you can breathe more clearly, mm-hmm. so that you can absorb prana more clearly when you're doing pranayama. So that's number one, neti. Number two is called dauti. Dauti means to purge. And there's a couple of different ways of doing dauti. One is where they swallow this like saline cloth into the stomach, and it kind of like soaks up the liquid in the stomach and then they pull it back out. Mm. The second one, I don't have any experience with, but my sister has done it when she went to India. And it's basically you drink like 3 or 4 liters of salty water. Mm. And the idea is that you're meant to drink it until you purge. And what they say is that the salty water should come out clear through both ends. Mm-hmm. So go figure, you kind of get the idea. So that's called dauti. That's the second one.
Not to be done without, yeah.
Without the proper guidance. Yeah. I would not recommend either of those to anyone that we work with. Yeah. The third one is called Nauli, and it's something that we teach on our 300-hour program. Nauli Kriya it's kind of like working with Uddiyana Bandha in a very specific way, where you hold the breath on the exhale retention and then you churn the belly in a specific way to massage the organs and get the digestive system really clearing out in a very precise way. Mm. So Nauli is number three. Number four is Kapalbhati. Kapalbhati you might be familiar with. We do it in our Hatha classes all the time. It's kind of like a pumping of the abdomen. Mm. I think I might even have like a YouTube tutorial for Kapalbhati. Kapalbhati means Kapal is your skull and Bhati is like cleansing, shining, skull shining breath. Another one for cleaning the nasal passage for pranayama. The fifth one is called Basti. Basti is like an enema up your bum.
Oh, it doesn't have to be up your bum.
I think it is in Hatha.
Oh. Well, there's other types of Basti as well, yeah. But yeah.
And then the sixth one is called Tratakam, which is another one that we teach on our trainings. But it's basically you stare at a specific object. Usually it's like a candle flame, but you can do it with like anything in nature, mountains, ocean, that kind of stuff. But you'll stare at something for a specific period of time without blinking. And for us, it's like staring at a candle for 20 minutes without blinking. And what it does is it purges the eyes and the tear ducts. It kind of brings on crying to cleanse the eyes so that we can see more clearly. So in traditional Hatha Yoga, those are the six cleansing actions. Mm. And as I said, some of them we do teach quite often on our trainings, and I find them incredibly beneficial. Things like Kapalbhati and Nauli Kriya, I'm doing most days. Mm. I find that like Kapalbhati, as far as like if I'm ever congested and I'm finding it hard to breathe, it's a really good one to just create that movement in the breath.
Same with neti pot.
Yeah, neti we do every day. Mm. And so yeah, these are cleansing practices that can be done every single day, and they're super accessible. Some of them are super accessible. Yeah. Some of them are just inappropriate.
Well,
for our context.
In our context, yeah.
Okay, so that's Hatha Yoga cleansing. Mm-hmm. Ayurvedic cleansing. Mm. What does that involve?
Well, most commonly, what we're looking at is a mono-food fast. And so what that means is that we are fasting on one specific type of food that is usually khichdi, which is a blend of rice, basmati rice, and split mung beans, usually. And so what it means is that for an extended period of time, whether it's 1 day, 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, however long, much longer you can do, you are only consuming rice and mung beans. along with spices and vegetables where necessary. And sometimes for breakfast, you can have khichdi or you can just have rice. And so basically what this does is that you're still fueling your body with the appropriate amount of nutrients and nourishments. The combination of the basmati rice and the split mung bean form complete protein. Is that what it's called? Something like that. That it's essential for the body to survive, really. And so when you eat the same food over and over for a period of time, your stomach, your digestive system gets used to what's coming in. It starts to predict what's coming in. It knows the digestive secretions. It knows what how to do it. It just is something that becomes almost...
effortless.
Effortless, for sure. And so when that is happening, it means the extra energy that is usually, you know, being sent to the digestive system to process, our, you know, various food, as well as, you know, sensory information, etc., that energy that is, you know, extra at this point of time can go into this process of cleansing the body, cleansing the digestive system, cleansing the mind, etc.
And I think for me, coming from like water fasting or juice fasting and going into the khichdi fasting, I found that it was similar in experience. Like I had the same symptoms.
Yeah.
Where, you know, on day three, anytime like withdrawal I fast, symptoms, I get those withdrawal symptoms. I'll get a headache and I'll get all this stuff. But I found that with the khichdi, it was more sustainable in the long run. Like I could easily do 7 days on khichdi, but 7 days on water or juice would be a real push.
Yeah, and I think that's it's important what you said, like those symptoms are not symptoms of the cleanse, they're withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
And that it's important that, you know, no matter what you experience in whatever cleansing experience you do, that those symptoms are already there. They're already underlying in your experience, whether it's because of what you're eating or how you're eating or your just digestive system in general, those symptoms already exist. And all that you're doing with the process of cleanse is, cleansing is illuminating them. Totally. And bringing them to the surface to be processed or sorted out.
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed that was the difference between those two, the water fasting and the khichdi cleansing, is that coming off a khichdi cleanse is a hell of a lot easier than coming off a water fast. Because in a water fast, your digestive process literally just stops because there's nothing coming in.
Yeah.
And so all of that energy that's going into the digestive system is cut off. So then when you go and break the fast, maybe you eat a meal. I mean, that's what I would always do is I would go and eat a meal and it would be so hard to digest it because I didn't have any digestive system left.
Yeah.
Whereas with the khichdi fast, you know, on day three or four, you might start to add a vegetable, a broccoli or a sweet potato, and then you can add something else, you add something else. And I found that just coming off the cleanse was a lot more sustainable and a lot more intentional. And because I was used to eating those 3 meals a day of khichdi, I wouldn't get those like ravenous...
binge almost.
Yeah, binge-like symptoms at the end of the cleanse. It would keep me motivated to continue eating healthy for an extended period of time. So yeah, I think it's a really, really beneficial way of fasting.
Yeah.
And hopefully something that grows in popularity, especially in the modern world.
Yeah, for sure. And I think maybe just on that as well, like the one thing that we haven't really touched on is the idea of intermittent fasting, which is something that's really popular. And from what I understand, it's that you eat between an 8-hour window.
It depends.
Yeah.
It depends on what window you want to select for yourself.
Right. So yeah, usually I guess it depends that you eat or in a specific window of time. For example, when I was doing my research into it years and years ago, I think it was an 8-hour for me. And then what does that leave? 16 hours?
Yeah.
Then a 16-hour window of not eating so that the body can, you know, adequately digest. And I think from just like a Western or a modern perspective on that, I think that a lot of people can just jam a lot of calories and food into that 8-hour or whatever window because that's what they need to meet their macros or to, you know, be able to expel the amount of energy in the gym or whatever, you know, exercise that they're doing. Which maybe is not so great because maybe you're not even hungry when you're doing that. Mm. But like from an Ayurvedic perspective, like if we're looking at meal times, we're kind of looking at the same thing as intermittent fasting, where, you know, we want to make sure that there's definitely enough time between meals, ideally like 4 to 5 hours, so that the food of our previous meal can properly digest. And on top of that, that there's, you know, a long period of time where you don't eat overnight. That if we're eating breakfast around 7 or 8 a.m. in the morning, and then we're eating lunch around 12 to 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and then for dinner, you're eating dinner, between like 5 and 6 p.m., you know, if you finish dinner by 6 p.m., you want at least 4 hours before bedtime so that the food can properly digest. But then on top of that, that's like, you know, 6 and then 7, 8, hours without eating. That's like 13-14 hours without eating between your dinner and your breakfast. So it kind of almost incorporates that into it. So that's just some food for thought as well, that, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other, and that, you know, the Ayurvedic principles can actually sometimes incorporate these modern day principles in.
Yeah, and I think that once you get really familiar with the Khichdi fasting process, I mean, for us it's something that we try to do maybe once a week, that we just have one day a week where we eat lighter meals. Mm-hmm. We just eat the khichdi or the kunyi brekhi for that one day once a week to give our digestive system a break.
Yeah, and that's a great,
I think it's a really good point. Like continual process, just to make sure that you're still engaging in that.
Yeah, and it's also a great way to ease into it almost. Yeah. That for somebody that has never cleansed before, starting with one meal of khichdi a week or one whole day of khichdi a week can be much more sustainable than just like cold turkey, 7 days of khichdi for the first time ever.
Yeah.
That it can be a sustainable and slow process of detoxification, so that if you do a big khichdi cleanse or a big fast, that it's not so overwhelming with symptoms.
Yeah, and I think the more intense the cleanse, the more intense the symptoms.
Exactly, yeah.
That like the longer you cleanse, the more deeply you're going into the different tissues in the body, and therefore the more you're bringing to the surface. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, if you just dive into 7 days, you've never done any cleanse before, and then you get these just like intense withdrawals or intense symptoms, it can kind of put you off cleansing and be like, look, actually, that's not for me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that can be really helpful, is just taking it slow, taking it nice and easy.
Agreed.
Cool. And so what about the other type of cleansing for Ayurveda?
So on top of that, we have Panchakarma. Maybe you can understand the word from our previous introduction, but pancha again means five, and karma also means actions. That kr sound is kind of kr, the root syllable of action. So panchakarma is, for the most part, a very traditional, intense cleansing intense process. That it's something that you can be referred on to really go deep into some disease, you know, whether it's a digestive issue, whether it's, a muscle issue, bone issue, whatever kind of like disease or symptoms that you experience in your everyday life. If you have worked with Ayurvedic recommendations for a long period of time and still not much is shifting, it also depends on the stage of disease. So if it's something you've had for quite a while, then panchakarma can definitely be considered. So it's basically, there's five actions or cleansing processes that make up the panchakarma, but not all five are given to every person. It really depends on the constitution of the doshas. It depends on the imbalance, etc. And when you work with a skilled practitioner, they will create a panchakarma protocol that's unique to you and your experience. And so what this often looks like is, khichdi cleansing, definitely, that you go on a specific diet as per your Ayurvedic recommendations or consultant. And then on top of that, you go through specific treatments. This can look like Abhyanga. This can look like Basti, like we spoke about the enema. It can look like, there's so many other ones. I probably won't go into them now, because it gets a bit complex, but it's something that you can do at home. Actually, there's a lot of people, including my teacher, that offers Panchakarma at home protocol. Of course, it's not going to be quite the same as a traditional Panchakarma process, but usually they're a residential program. So that means that you go and you stay at a retreat center or you stay at a hospital, etc., where you will be treated and cared for and looked after for that period of time, meaning that you don't have to do the cooking, you don't have to do the cleaning, you don't have to do the relating with your family, you don't have to do the working, ideally, that you actually get time to completely strip away from life and focus on the healing process of your body. And so ideally Panchakarmas are around 21 days, but of course modern day world you can do much less these days, 7 days, 11 days, 14 days, but you can also do much, much longer. You can do an extended period of time. You can do these at specific residential places for them. And the idea is that, yeah, we're really deeply cleansing the body. And it's also recommended 6 months prior to conception. So like if you're planning on conceiving or planning on bringing new life into this world with a partner or without a partner, that it's ideal that all parties involved go through a Panchakarma protocol 6 months before that conception. Because what happens is, you know, it gets a little complicated, but it takes around 40 days from what you're eating to be turned into our reproductive fluids or our essence of reproduction. Mm. And so, you know, even if you just started eating healthily for, you know, 40 days, it would take that long period of time between what you've actually eaten of health to be nourishing the reproductive fluids. And so that's to say that if you want a proper detoxification, a proper cleanse of those fluids, as well as the proper nourishment and adequate, you know, optimal process of your reproductive tissues, you're going to want at least 6 months of proper diet and proper action in order to give your offspring the best chance of life without disease and without imbalance.
Mm. Yeah, because any of that disease or imbalance will be carried through through that procreative process.
Yeah.
Cool. All right then. So that's a little bit of a cap on what is Hatha Yoga cleansing and what is Ayurvedic cleansing.
Mm.
So maybe now let's give a couple of pieces of wisdom to anyone who is interested in some kind of cleansing process.
Mm.
How do you go about that? What's involved in that? And maybe some helpful tips just based on our own experience.
Mm. Cool. I just want to tie in back to Panchakarma, but it also ties in here, is that cleansing is not ideal if you've never done anything like this before.
Mm.
Like if you're just like coming off a binge of fast food, alcohol and drugs, and you want to change your life, It's not ideal to just
go straight into an extreme. Not at all. Yeah, and yeah. I think that's why I wanted to give that context in the beginning of like, we've both been exploring this for many years now. And Paige and I don't by any means live conventional lives.
Mm.
Like we look at, like if you were to compare the way that we live to an average person living in Melbourne in Australia, like we don't drink alcohol, we don't eat meat. There are so many things that we don't take.
Mm.
And that allows us to spend a little more time cleansing because we don't have to detox from
that stuff,
alcohol or drugs or smoking or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really good piece of advice, is that you could start by, like what I did 6-7 years ago, you could start by stopping drinking and smoking.
Yeah.
You know, you could start by just removing some of the toxic substances from your life. You could start by just cutting back on the processed sugar. Like, cutting out alcohol, smoking, drugs, and sugar is enough of a cleanse.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would see just some radical shifts and changes just from doing that. I think that we love to rush into the most extremist thing to see the most extreme results. But the truth of the matter is, even if you take the small steps, you'll see radical changes that will improve your health. And that's really the work of yoga teachers or yoga therapists more so, as well as Ayurvedic health consultants. That's what we do as a job, is we take the small and sustainable, bolded, sustainable steps to help you and our students and our clients get their health back on track. But it has to be sustainable, because you can do all the crazy things that you want, but if it's not something that feels like you can hold down, you'll just, you know, throw in the towel and you don't see the results after 3 days and give up and walk away and try the next fad that comes into place.
Yeah, I had a conversation with someone the other day, a friend of mine who's a yoga teacher, and yeah, we were talking about this. How do we get people to actually put practices in place? Mm-hmm. And my answer was just simplicity. Just pick one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And let that one thing be the snowball effect that leads to the next thing and the next thing. Mm-hmm. And the next thing.
Yeah.
I think that there needs to be no rush with this kind of stuff. It needs to be a slow and gradual process, and that's how you'll have success with it.
100%.
Okay. So from an Ayurvedic perspective, when would be the best time to cleanse?
So the seasonal transitions between summer to winter and winter to summer are the times where we're most vulnerable.
Okay.
Which means, as I'm sure you intuitively understand, this is the times where people get sick a lot. Mm. You know, we see it now in Melbourne, especially just the last month of April. It was just everyone was getting sick. Everyone.
Mm. Totally.
And so, yeah, this is a time where we're the most vulnerable health-wise. And so, therefore, it's the time where we need to strip it back the most, and that we need to find a balanced state of health. And we can do that with cleansing. Mm. Of course, we don't want to be cleansing if our body or our immune system already feels a little bit dysregulated or, you know, less than optimal. But it can be a preventative method. So really, the best time to be cleansing is the equinoxes, you know, the autumn equinox or the spring equinox, because that really is that pinpoint of seasonal shift and transition.
Totally.
And I think it's important to understand as well that there's two different doshas involved when we're talking about Ayurveda and we're talking about seasonal transitions. And the first is that springtime is often related to Kapha dosha, the dosha of water and earth, heaviness, denseness. And so springtime is such a good time to cleanse. It's the most optimal time in the year to be cleansing. That's why we have, you know, that intuitive ability of spring cleaning, of, you know, cleaning the house, cleaning, you know, your wardrobe, whatever it is. But really, it's the spring cleaning of the body and the digestive tract that's the most helpful, especially as we come out of winter, where we've been consuming mostly like heavy and soupy and, you know, dense foods as a way of warming and grounding ourselves, and then transitioning into summer where the foods get a little bit lighter. You know, this is the perfect time to be cleansing. And then on top of that, Vata dosha rules autumn or fall. And Vata by nature is actually quite clear and quite cleansing. So you have to be so careful when you cleanse during this period of time, because it can create excess Vata. You know, when we cleanse too much or too vigorously, we can actually increase Vata, which is definitely not what we want. But it's still an appropriate time to cleanse, but maybe a less intense version, maybe a little more vegetables, a little more lenience with how you cleanse during this time.
Cool.
And as I said, ideally as well, 6 months prior to conception is another optimal time to be cleansing.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so next up, how do you know when you need to cleanse? I think for me, I would lean into feeling.
Mm.
And I would lean into personally feeling into the panchakoshas. I would feel into, how do I feel physically? How do I feel energetically? How do I feel mentally? How do I feel emotionally? How do I feel spiritually?
Mm.
And if there is any fullness or stagnation or heaviness at any of those five levels, then I would consider some kind of cleansing action, whether that's something simple or whether that's something more intense.
Mm. And I think from an Ayurvedic perspective, you look at the indications of or metabolic toxins in the body, that we'd look at the coating of the tongue. You know, if there is a thick kind of toxic coating on the tongue when you scrape your tongue every morning, that's a good indication that you could probably do with some cleansing. The other indications of arm are like smelly, sticky feces, Like where they stick to the bowl, you know, that kind of poop. Or that there's a lot of wiping involved. That is generally an indication of toxins within the digestive tract.
How many wipes?
You just know. You know when it's too sticky.
I think most people know when they need to cleanse in general. Like sometimes we'll see clients, we'll say, okay, well, how's your diet? And they're like, oh, you know.
Yeah, could be better.
I could definitely be eating better. Like that's probably a sign that you should start to partake in some kind of cleansing actions.
And that's the thing is that, I just don't know if I want to go down that rabbit hole. But that when we are cleansing, we don't want it to be just like a quick and dirty.
It's not a quick fix.
No, but it, like for some people, what they think is I'll just do this 3 or 5 day Khichdi cleanse and then I'll go back to eating what I usually eat. And that's not it. Let me tell you that. That's not going to do any good. I mean, probably a little bit, but not really.
Well, and that's the thing is like yoga and Ayurveda is not quick fix. It's never, ever, ever been about quick fixes. Mm. It's always been about slow and gradual lifestyle change.
Yeah.
That it's about adopting a yogic or an Ayurvedic lifestyle.
Yeah.
And cleansing is a part of that, but cleansing in that context is something that is continual.
Yeah, totally. And I think, just continuing on, the other signs of that we look at, cardinal signs of is bad breath, which I think is ridiculously common. Because you know there's the craze of like chewing gum and mints.
Yeah.
you just use it to mask your bad breath. But bad breath is not normal. And then the other one is body odor. Like if you have like a strongly offensive smelling BO, that's probably an indication that there's some metabolic toxins going on in your body as well. And that's not to say that you're not meant to smell at all, but you know when you've eaten something bad and that comes through your BO.
Totally. And so I think just to start moving us on, another piece of advice would be if you're new to cleansing, if it's something that you haven't done before, consider a guided cleanse.
Oh, yeah.
Consider going to see someone like Paige, an Ayurvedic practitioner, or like me, a yoga therapist, to guide you through a cleanse. And to have a little bit of an assessment as to where are you at, what is contributing to your state of imbalance, and what cleansing actions would be the most appropriate for you in your current context and situation.
Yeah.
On top of that, having a guide, on top of that is having a support network, just like a group of friends that you could do the cleanse with, or a partner that you could do the cleanse with, or at least a group of friends or a partner or a parent or a sibling that you can check in with once a day or once every couple of days and just have a chat about it. You know, how am I feeling with this cleanse? You know, what's coming up for me? What are the difficulties of it? That kind of stuff. I think just like being around supportive people, having the environment that's conducive to a cleanse is key.
100%.
You know, for me, getting grumpy all the time, I really had to rely on Paige, who lives with me 24/7, and her mother, who lives with us, to be a little bit forgiving with my moods.
Yeah, totally.
Like if I'm waking up a little bit snappy, or offensive in my language, that there's this like mutual understanding that I'm going through a process and it's not comfortable for me at the moment. I think that's really helpful. Mm. The next thing that I would recommend would be having some space to cleanse, like trying to at least reduce your daily workload if possible. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you ask your boss, you say, look, I'm going to do this cleanse. It's actually going to make me more productive in the long run. It's going to make me more healthful. It's going to make my mind a lot clearer. Do you think it would be possible for me to finish on time for the next week? And maybe do you think I could offload some of my tasks to this person for the next week? Mm-hmm. And I'll pick up the following week once I've finished my cleanse, something like that.
Yeah. And also like if you can't have that ability, that you choose your cleansing dates optimally, like starting on a Friday and
finishing on a Sunday.
Yeah. And you know, it's really those first couple of days that it's the toughest for most people. So yeah, like, you know, making those first 3 days, if you want to do a longer one on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's, it's going to be optimal in terms of making sure that, yeah, you have that space.
And if you were to do it Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you would probably remove yourself from any social obligations, mm-hmm. especially with the friend group that you drink with.
Yes, definitely. Any kind of outwardness projection, even, yeah, social media, TV, work, computer, friends, socializations, as much as possible, everything that, you know, draws your energy outwards, you refrain and you bring that energy in for that period of time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just like on that, like the environment is everything. Like if you are living with someone who is constantly encouraging you to drink with them every night, maybe removing yourself from that person for the mm-hmm. cleansing period. I remember the first time I really went ham on the cleansing. I did 3 months, no social media, no alcohol, no drinking, no smoking. And I wanted to eat a whole food diet. I remember telling my friends, and I was sitting at the pub with my friends, and these were the friends that I hung out with, grew up with, and always our relationship was revolved around drinking. I said, I'm going to do this cleanse for 3 months, and I'm not going to drink with you, and I'm not going to eat with you, and so on and so forth. And they just looked at me and said, why?
Mm.
Why would you want to do that? And it kind of confirmed my suspicions that, like, I can't actually spend too much time with these people whilst I'm doing this because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
And they will encourage me to take up those habits that aren't conducive to the cleanse.
100%.
Totally. Okay. And then the final thing would just be integrating the cleanse at the end of it.
Yeah. I think that on top of that, integration, but also preparation, we often say in Ayurveda that the cleanse, you know, itself is not, like, how successful or how much benefit you see from the cleanse is not only determined on your actions during the cleansing period, but in your actions of preparation and integration before and after the cleansing period. That's to say that you can't just go cold turkey and do this and then just go back to your usual life. It's just not the way it works, and that you're not going to see the benefits just by doing that. So it's important that, yeah, in the preparation, you're starting to reduce the things that we spoke about at the start. You're starting to reduce the things that you're going to be giving up or refraining from during that period of time. And after the cleansing period, we go through the process of integration, that we slowly find a happy medium where you start to integrate foods like different types of vegetables, maybe chapatis, like flour products, all these different things, fruits, etc. You integrate to a point where it feels comfortable in your diet, and that you don't just pick up the next day going through Macca's drive-thru to get your bacon egg muffin and your, you know, double shot flat white. That there needs to be a process of process of integration, and it's possibly, arguably, the most important point of the cleanse.
Yeah, because if you do the cleanse and you don't take anything from it, if you don't learn anything, then it's just pointless.
Yeah, and that's why it's hard with cleansing practices and people with eating disorders, is that, you know, it can almost create too much restriction or rigidity, that after the cleansing period comes a period of binging.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's very important that you're working with a guided, a practitioner, to be guided through that process as well.
But yeah, for sure. And I think just like for me personally, after doing that first initial cleanse that I just spoke about, when I spoke to my friends about it, like I never went back to drinking.
Yeah.
It just was like, oh my God, I can't believe how good I feel when I don't include these things in my diet.
Yeah, true.
And so that integration process was very tangible for me, to the point where it just like, I mean, I still drank for a few years after that, and I would get drunk every now and then, but gradually it's just like, now I might have a beer once every couple of months, if that. Mm. This will initiate this process of releasing things from your life that are not beneficial in the long run.
Yeah, just be ready for that. Be ready for that process of integration and adjustment and trying new things. Be open-minded.
Yeah, for sure. All right, quick recap.
All right.
What have we spoken about
today? We spoke about the difference between cleansing from a modern perspective, water fast, juice fast, intermittent fasting, with not much context for them because we're not really well-versed in them.
Not at all.
But we compared them with the Ayurvedic principle of cleansing, like a mono-food fast of Khichdi. And we also spoke about the Hatha Yoga practices of cleansing, which involve the Shatkriyas or the purification actions, such as Jalaneti, Kapalabhati, Chataka, and other ones.
We spoke about Panchakarma.
Oh, yeah, we did speak about Panchakarma.
And that kind of more intensive and immersive Ayurvedic style of cleansing.
Yeah.
And then we just gave some general tips for you if you are interested in cleansing. We spoke about the best time to cleanse, which is the seasonal transitions of the autumn or spring equinox.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke about how to know when you need to cleanse, and we gave that tip of just feeling into it.
Yeah.
We spoke to making sure that you're taking a guided cleanse, that you have a support network around that cleanse. We spoke about creating the space surrounding your cleanse and making sure that you can remove at least some of your responsibilities for the duration of the cleanse. We spoke about, finally, that preparation and integration of the cleanse.
Yeah. Fun topic.
Yeah.
And I think on that, that I briefly mentioned, but I have that fully guided cleanse available on the website, and that I'm happy to take consultations. Like, that's a self-paced kind of, you know, very general approach to cleansing. But if you actually want to work deeply, to look into consultations and you know, one-on-ones with both of us, but, you know, that's something that I specifically am working with, to go through that period, I'm more than happy to support you in that. And I've done it so many times now that, you know, I see the benefits, I understand the benefits, and I also understand how you need to be supported in that process.
Yeah, totally. And if you're looking more into the Hatha Yoga side, you could consider taking my Asana Sadhana Dharma online training. We do many of the Hatha Yoga cleansing practices on that training. There's quite an extended Trataka practice as well on there. We really, really like, if you are interested in stuff, please reach out to us. We'd love to support you through it. It's really something that we both feel very passionately about, and something that we're actively engaged in. So we would love to support you. Final announcements. We are going to India in September, October. You can join us for a 200-hour training. It's 3 weeks long, or a 1 week long retreat. And we'll be running an information night for that. Both of those experiences. When? Next
Sunday, the 21st of May.
In
Berwick. We could probably stream online though. So if you want to join online, just get in touch with us.
Yeah. And the regular stuff. You can practice with us online on the online studio.
You have a new training coming up.
Oh, I do have a new training coming up. It is called Dharma and Sankalpa Shakti, and it is designed to move you toward your life purpose. It's a training focused on pratyahara, inwardness, and svadhyaya, self-study. It's a lot of journaling practices, creative writing, in order to help you to uncover what is most meaningful to you in your life. It's 20 hours. It just goes for one weekend. It is happening on the 16th of June. 16th, 17th, and 18th of June.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that, it's on the website. Links for all this stuff will be in the show notes. So please scroll on down if you want to have a look at that. Apart from that, come and join us in the studio. Practice with us online. We would love to hear from you. And the very last thing, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with someone that you love, anyone that you think could benefit from it. Share it on Instagram, share it with your mom, share it with your best friend. Anyone is good. We really appreciate the support. We don't get paid in any way for doing this. So if you love the content, please share it.
Hari Om.
Hari Om.